It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Bear down, Arlington Heights Bears. Put up a fight with a might so fearlessly. Football season is underway, and the, for now, Chicago Bears, well, it seems like this year they're the ones getting mauled. The next chapter in the history of our Chicago Bears is being written right now. The team, like so many young urban professionals, is contemplating a move to the suburbs, where they can have a bigger backyard and more revenue opportunities, but that is a conversation for another day. Instead, today, we're going to turn back to the first chapter in the history of the team, which goes back to the 1910s and early 20s. Back then, the team was based in Decatur, and they weren't even called the Bears yet. Instead, they were the Staleys. There's a museum in Decatur that focuses on the story of the man who made the team. His name was A.E. Staley. It's called the Staley Museum. And joining us now to talk about some of that history is the museum's director, Laura Yar. Laura, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
And listeners, as ever, if you have questions about the history, if you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number. This part of our show today is live, 800-222-9455. All right, Laura, I think to understand why the Bears were once the Decatur Staleys, you have to start with A.E. Staley himself and who he was. So briefly, who was A.E. Staley?
Well, A.E. Staley was, I guess we could use a lot of different ways to names to describe him, but essentially he started a starch manufacturing company here in Decatur, Illinois. And, well, he bought the plant in 1906. It was up and running by 1912. He's a mega entrepreneur, an American dreamer, and in some ways, in some respects, a founding father of our agricultural community here in the Midwest.
Interesting. So what do we know about A.E. Staley's reasons for starting a football team?
Well, in the Staley story, I often see that there is generally a two-part answer to that question. There's the family lore and the family, and then there's usually a practical reason. In the case of the family lore, and these are things that we know because Staley answered interview questions along these lines himself in his own words. He was brought up, he was raised in North Carolina, had very little formal education, worked a lot as a child on the family farm, and had little access to sports and activities like that himself as a child. So he was very interested in sports later on. But I think the better answer to that question is the practical side. Staley started his football program or his athletic program at the company in 1919, just after the end of the First World War. And I think both he, his employees, and probably the nation at large were ready to have some fun and something to focus on besides the war.
So the team starts out is an industrial team, right? Like a company team, like you'd have, maybe today, I don't know that there are many company football teams, but you might have a softball team or something like that. How did it morph from that into a professional sports organization?
That's a good question. You're right. It was an industrial team and it was, like I said, essentially established to provide entertainment and an activity for his employees in a Decatur community that in the early 1900s didn't have a lot to offer in that way. But what changed? Well, it really kind of changed after a game that has gone down in history as the game that was never played against Arcola at the time. The Arcola businessmen had established a team and they had played the Staleys previously and the Staleys had kind of really spanked them on that team, on that game. And so they wanted a rematch. But then Mr. Staley got word through the grapevine that they were recruiting players from college teams to play. And he felt that that was unfair. And he was very much a fair play kind of man. So he refused to send his team to play. And that kind of started the ball rolling for what was kind of the trend in football at that time of this recruiting players to play on your team. Staley did once he did hire George Halas and start recruiting teams, the team players, he did remain faithful to the industrial standard that they also had to work for his company to play on the team. But essentially, that game that never was never played is what got the ball rolling of Staley going out and initially finding George Halas and recruiting other players to be a part of his team and establishing what would be kind of a 1919-1920 version of a dream team.
Well, that's a good bridge to talking about George Stanley Halas, the legendary Chicago Bears figure. In fact, the team still wears GSH on their sleeve because of his heritage. But talk about the work that he did on the team and some of the precedents he set.
Well, there were quite a few different parts. George Halas was interviewed by representatives from the Staley Manufacturing Company. In this case, it was George Chamberlain, who was Staley's right-hand man, went up and met with George Halas in 1920, January of 1920. And they discussed Halas coming to not only play baseball on the Staley baseball team, since George Halas had a background both in baseball and football. He would play on the Staley team and he would coach the football team. And he would be hired at $50 an hour. And at this time, George Halas had kind of had to leave his athletic career to the side due to some injuries that he sustained playing baseball. And so at this time he was a bridge engineer in Chicago. So this opened a door for Halas to get back into the athletic arena as well as kind of continue his work career. As we know, the work careers went to the side and he continued with his athletic career in a big way. But he came to the Staley Manufacturing Company in March. He and Staley had reached an agreement that he and whatever players he recruited would work for the company, but they would be given 2 hours a day to practice football so that they could be ready for the upcoming 1920 season.
And he's innovative. He was started doing recruiting and other things that were not necessarily the norm at the time.
No, and I think one of the a lot of people talk about the beginnings of the NFL, and Halas was at the meeting in Canton, Ohio in September of 1920. He met with Jim Thorpe and other names in the football arena at that time, and the goal was to establish rules and regulations and a league so that everyone would be playing, according to the same rules and regulations. And he was a part of that innovative chapter in football, on the Staley, on the Staley payroll at that time.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the early history of the Chicago Bears, more specifically their roots in Decatur as the Decatur Staleys, and the man who made that team a reality, Mr. A.E. Staley. We're talking with Laura Yar, director of the A.E. Staley Museum in Decatur, 800-222-9455, if you want to join us. All right, let's talk about, we have, I don't know, about 5 minutes or so left in our conversation. What were some of the challenges the Staleys faced as the team was growing in Decatur? And I should say the team faced as it was growing in Decatur.
Well, probably the challenges were, in some ways, more for Mr. Staley than they were for the team, although it would play out being a challenge for the team. They really only had one full season playing in Decatur with Decatur as their home base, and that was the 1920 season. And they played well that season, and had essentially a winning season. Although at the end, Akron, Ohio took the title, but the Staleys argued that they should have had it. But that will bring about kind of the changes that will push them towards Chicago. What were some of the challenges? Well, as the team winning during their 1920 season, and they got better and better at their play. And bear in mind that at this time, there wasn't a lot of trade outs. So the team that was fielded played both offense and defense the whole time. They had a bench, but they didn't really use the bench. The players played the whole time. So these guys got a lot of practice. They excelled in their game. And as they started to excel, they, really wanted better pay. They wanted more pay. And one of the conflicts that Staley will have to deal with is how to give them more pay, because really their pay was the perks that they got for playing football was a percentage of the gate pay. And Staley Field just didn't seat that many people. They could seat, I think, 2,000 people. And without building another stadium, Staley really couldn't increase the gate pay for them. Another challenge that they encountered was the fact that the other employees at the Staley Manufacturing Company were starting to grumble about the preferential treatment players were getting. Players were even being given foreman type positions, being given promotions ahead of long-term, more experienced people, in order for Staley to kind of keep giving them, the perks that they wanted. So Staley was really kind of in a catch 22. He had this great football team, but he had about 2,000 employees at the time that depended on him. And really, the football program was meant to be more of an entertainment side activity. It wasn't his primary, business activity. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, they decide that maybe for the benefit of the team and also to expand advertising, I guess you would say, for the Staley name, that's when they decide to head to Chicago. And Staley rents Wrigley Field for the 1921 season. And additional conversations are going on. At this point in time, George Hollis and Dutch Sterneman also see the potential for the team. And they realize that, Staley just isn't going to be able to continue with the team, supporting the team financially. It's getting to be too much of a business expense for him. And he has to answer to his investors. So they reach an agreement to go to Chicago. Staley continues to have a percentage. Dutch Sterneman and George Hollis have another percentage. And that's how they end up going to Chicago initially.
Interesting. Well, unfortunately, we're not going to have too much time left in our conversation, maybe just a minute. There's so much of A.E. Staley's legacy we could get into, and maybe we can talk about it another day. This is not the biggest part of his life, but how does it fit into that bigger picture of his legacy, briefly?
I think that in the decade of 1920 here at the museum, we call that his prolific decade. The establishing of the fellowship club and the athletic program was the first step in a series of important chapters in his legacy. Soybeans will come next, and that really has a lot to do with why he let the football program go. He was gearing up to start manufacturing, processing soybeans, and helping farmers turn to crop rotation after they had depleted their fields during World War I. And so it really is the beginning of an era, which we are living the centennial period of right now, of a series of wonderful accomplishments that not only helped grow Decatur, but changed the face of agriculture. And just really, it's a great story, a great local history story for an industrial town like Decatur, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And I understand there's a documentary, Fields of Gold is what it's called. It's playing in Decatur now. It'll eventually be on streaming platforms. Maybe we can talk about that on a future show. Laura Yar is director of the A.E. Staley Museum in Decatur. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you for having me.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vinson, and Jose Zepeda. Our interns, Nick Boyven, technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again on Monday.